Now, joining me on the phone is Maria Murphy. Good morning, Maria, and welcome to Northside Today.
Thank you very much, Donny. Good morning to you.
Now, Maria, we have spent the last week, I won't say celebrating, but I will say commemorating Armistice, culminating yesterday, which the entire world knows that on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, World War One ended. And it's a funny thing, but I happen to be listening to a historian speaking in relation to this yesterday, and he talked about the homecoming in Dublin, etc., and the celebrations. And he made the point that it was a typical Irish celebration. It was all very jovial, and everybody was having a great time and celebrating, or I suppose I won't say celebrating, but celebrating the fact that World War One had drawn to a close. But as the hours and the days progressed, the level of violence increased as the level of alcohol intake increased. And this brings us to Seamus Kelly, Maria.
That's right, Tony. Seamus O'Kelly was working in Harcourt Street. At the time, there's a building there, and it's now Conor na Gaeilge. But at the time, it was Sinn Féin. And there's a photograph in the National Library of what happened after Armistice Day. The windows were smashed, the door was broken down. The place was ransacked. And in there was working a man called Seamus O'Kelly, among other people. And he was editing Arthur Griffith's newspaper, which was called Nationality. They ransacked the building, and Seamus died as a result. He was an invalid. He had a bad heart as a result of an illness he'd had a few years before that. And he collapsed and he died later in Jervis Street Hospital.
And he originally from Galway, and he was 38 years of age. So this, I won't say that he was a casualty of the armistice, but I mean, it just goes to show you once again that there was, I suppose, a certain amount of mayhem surrounding the ending of World War One as well. And I suppose due to the fact of where he was working, it was felt that he would have looked unfavourably upon the war anyway, or maybe even he may have had a certain leaning towards the Germans in this case.
Yeah, well, that was a German plot, and that was the thing that was dreamt up by the British government to give them an excuse to arrest key leaders of the national movement in Ireland, among whom was Arthur Griffith. The German plot was a bogus thing. It was like the gunpowder plot earlier on in history. And I was just reading yesterday about that in there's a magazine called The Tablet. And it's very interesting because conscientious objectors were jailed in England. They weren't allowed object to being forced into as they said, killing, taking other people's lives. And the whole reason the First World War took place was greatly debated in the papers at that time. I also have a copy beside me of the first edition of Nationality that Seamus O'Kelly edited, brilliantly written. And it goes right through the German plot, and where the plot emanated from was this conspiracy theory that the British dreamt up. So they'd, as I say, give them an excuse or a pretended excuse to arrest key people. And they were jailed for months on end, basically interned without trial, as were the conscientious objectors in England. They were held in prisons that weren't fit for a dog, you know. So
yeah, and as we all know from our recent history, we don't even have to go back that far. Internment is a weapon that works extremely well. Yeah. Anyway, Maria, that is sort of a prelude and a background for what we really want to talk about this morning, which is the Weaver's Grave and the dramatisation of that.
Brilliant. Yeah, thanks, Tony. The Weaver's Grave is a story that Seamus O'Kelly wrote, and it's been translated into I don't know many languages, but it's definitely translated into Russian, I think Japanese, French, Spanish, Italian. It had a great impact at the time when it was published around the world, literary circles, and James Joyce was very impressed by it, as was George Bernard Shaw, who wrote a letter to Seamus O'Kelly telling him how much he admired it. It's a very unusual story, and it's the first thing I ever came across by Seamus O'Kelly. And I bought it in Mid Abbey Street there. I just stepped in and I was browsing and I saw this. I was interested in the title because I'm a weaver myself, and I took it down and started to read it and thought, this is brilliant. Why have I never heard of this man before? And I presumed that he was a contemporary writer because of the cover. There was a modern painting on the front. So I discovered subsequently that he was long dead, and I started to track down other pieces of work that he had done. And then I mentioned this to a friend and a few friends, a few different people. And the result of that was that Breed Fahey, who is from Loughrea, she's from outside Loughrea, Breed Fahey staged a production of The Weaver's Grave earlier on this year. And that had a great impact. And then I met a man called Val O'Donnell, who I'd already known through FizzFest, which is an arts festival here in Fibstra. And Val is he's very experienced, and he's done one-man shows of Joyce, as well as Miles McGoppaline, Flann O'Brien, and he has a troupe of actors, and he's also associated with the Dublin Shakespeare Society, as is Breed Fahey. Now, would you like me to tell you a little bit about the history of The Weaver's Grave?
Yes, please, Marie, carry on there.
Yeah, it was published, I think, in 1917. And are sometime around then, and it's a long short story or a novella. And then in 1961 it was dramatised by RTE and the Micheál O'Hay, who was associated with the Abbey as well, was the man responsible for that, and they won the Prix d'Italia. And the Prix d'Italia is an internationally recognised prize for radio drama. So it meant that The Weaver's Grave was brought back into the public eye and international acclaim followed. It is, I am told, podcast on the RTE's website. So it's it's in the library system, so anybody who'd like to read it, anybody's interested in reading, I challenge them to name a better short story in the English language.
That's high praise indeed, Maria. Now, maybe that following on from that, we can discuss the group which you were a part of there in Fisbury, because you were in with us before, and I am fascinated by the interest that you have in, we'll say, pre-modern television and communication, I suppose, because, I remember, and I'm young enough to remember, when you had one channel, and then there was a great furore when we got two. Now we seem to have 1,000 of them, and there's nothing on the telly. But your group, and I love the idea, but you go back into, we'll say, the 60s from the inception of RTE1 and maybe up until the 70s, early 80s, and you talk about, and you get people who were involved in the making of those television programmes, which is an absolutely brilliant thing, to come along and discuss the programmes.
That's right, yeah. And some of them are in retirement now, so they have the time, and of course they're very generous. And one thing that Peter McAvoy has come along a few times, and he's kind of educated me, because we're all trying to give out about RTE and what they didn't do. But he has told me that the reason why so much stuff was wiped, and one of the things that was wiped was a television production of The Weaver's Grave that was done sometime in the 60s or 70s. And that was wiped. The reason they were wiped was the technology at the time to record something was very expensive, and I think they had to rent them from, I think, England. And if they wiped them, they could reuse them, you see. And at that time, they were only concerned with putting things out. There was no actual archive in any television studios anywhere in the world, I think. So the archive in RTE was only set up much, much later. And then it was a matter of trawling through and trying to find something that was left. And we're lucky that they have so much stuff there, you know. And as I say, they have the radio broadcast of Seamus O'Kelly's The Weaver's Grave. They have that podcast on their website. And just to mention RTE again, very generously, they answered our request, and they're putting on one of Seamus O'Kelly's novels on book on one. You know, on Radio 1, RT Radio 1, and that'll be on. I think it's starting tonight. It's called The Lady of Deer Park, and it's a really beautiful novel. And again, he had such psychological insight into people and the social conditions of the time. He politicized himself by the land war, and the land war was very bitter around where he lived. The Clan Rickard estate, there was furious and absolutely callous evictions there, and there was a lot of political turmoil as a result, and discussions, and people really, the thing about oppressing people is that you risk alienating them and you risk strengthening them, because people come together and they discuss things and they thrash things out, and their resolve is strengthened, and they come up with ingenious ways to subvert power. And that's really as a theme of a lot of his stories. They're brilliant stories. He was a natural Shanachie, and he liked to hang around with older people when he was young, and he picked up a lot of the stories, and he was well known among his friends as being a great man to come up with a story to entertain them. You know, when the lads were standing around the corners or taking a rest after the work in the fields, they'd say, "Seamus, tell us a story." He was famous for that. But later on, he honed his stories, and you can take the story at one level, it's a well-told tale, but he has a crucial subject, you know, that, and he doesn't kind of hammer you with it. It's only after you think, somebody's getting that there, you know. And so, as I say, if you bear the land war in mind and you read his stories, his short stories are really brilliant. And we thought the best way to commemorate Seamus O'Kelly was to introduce people to his work. So instead of talking about him, we just we decided to do readings of the stories. Now, Val O'Donnell was the one who selected the stories. We both read them, but he has such experience that he was able to pick out stories and extracts that worked well together. So what we have is like a cornucopia of Seamus O'Kelly's stories, and we are presenting them on Wednesday at lunchtime in the Writers' Museum in Parnell Square. It kicks off at 1 o'clock. Then Thursday evening at Pier Street Library in Dublin, and that kicks off at 5 o'clock. And then Friday evening in the new theatre that's part of the new library building in what was St. Pat's College, St. Patrick's College in Drumcondra, where teachers used to train. It's now part of DCU, and they call it the St. Patrick's Campus at Drumcondra. And then that kicks off at 6 o'clock. And then on Sunday, we'll be out in Dunleary, because he was living in Dunleary at the time of his death. He was sharing a residence with the painter Estella Solomons and her husband Seamus O'Sullivan. So that'll be at 4:30 on Sunday. And then we have an Irish language event on the 22nd, which is a Thursday. And that will be in the building where the attack happened. That was 6 Harcourt Street. It's now Conor and the Gaeilge, and that's going to be Éithí Gaeilge. It's going to be all Irish night. So, and all these events are free. So there'll be readings of his stories, and in Conor and the Gaeilge, we're going to have some actors doing a scene from a play called The Shoeless Child that has been translated into Irish by Gaeilge Baile Lough Ríoch, that is an Irish language group in Lough Ray. They did a beautiful translation into Irish, and it's called Mach na Mná Deirce. And this is a brilliant play. It's social realism of the time, and it has resonance for us today. It's about the rights of natural mothers over adoptive mothers, and features an interfering government inspector who tries to basically poke her nose in and destroy the nice life that the child has. And the person who played the role in the first production in the Rotunda was no less than Countess Markovitch, or Constance Markovitch, as she called herself. And James Stevens was one of the actors as well. And then the famous Maureen Shulig, who was reputed to be a beautiful woman and brilliant actress. She got excellent critical reviews, and she took part in 1916 Rising. She was in Jacobs later on, a couple of years later. Sorry if that's too much information, Donny.
No, it's fine, because the more information you have, the more it would resonate with people. And is there a website that people can go on to, Mara or Maria, or do you have that with you at the moment?
we're hoping to put up a website at some stage. We have no funding at all, and we haven't looked for funding because it takes a long time, as you know. And we have done all of this on no budget, just purely through generosity and passion for Seamus O'Kelly's work. And so, I mean, we're hoping to get some of his work reprinted. That will appear sometime in 2019, and we might make this an annual event. He definitely deserves to be read. It's like buried treasure, Tony. This is our heritage. This is belonging to all of us. Seamus O'Kelly wrote these beautiful stories and wonderful plays and two fantastic novels, and they're buried treasure, and we're bringing it to the surface, and it's for everybody to enjoy. So I'd encourage people to go to your library and put down your name for Seamus O'Kelly, anything by Seamus O'Kelly, and the librarians are very good. They'll track down any of his work that's still in the library system. And otherwise, look out for the reprints, which we hope to do in the new year. Now, the Lochray Group launched their, I think they did already launch the book, the play of Machnamh an Ó Dearca, The Shuler's Child, and that's available from Lochray. I think that they have an online presence, a website or something or other. So if you do an internet search, that might come up.
And indeed, of course, this interview, along with all our interviews here on Near FM, will be up on our website. We will be podcasting it. So just go on to the Near FM website and click on Listen Again, and you can hear this and indeed all our interviews. So if there are any details in relation to stuff that Maria has mentioned there, you can, and you missed them this time around, you just go onto the website and they're all there for you. Maria, thank you for a very informative and interesting interview. It is always a pleasure to talk to you. And again, thank you so much for joining us on the Monday edition of Northside Today.
Thank you so much, Tony. And thank you so much, Tony, for giving me the chance to do this. And can I just thank, before we go, can I thank all of the people at Pear Street Library, the Central Catholic Library, the Yarn Spinners, at the Teachers Club, the Cunanan na Gaeilge, who else did I say? Pear Street Library, and the wonderful people at DCU, and the Dublin Writers Museum, and Sweeney's Chemist in Lincoln Place. And just to say, we have a guided walk starting at Grogan's today at 1:30. We meet at Grogan's Pub, which is it's near the Paris Court Townhouse, near Grafton Street. And we'll be meeting there, and we'll go on a little walk just to talk about Seamus O'Kelly and the association he has at various places around Fitzwilliam Street, Merrion Square, Grafton Street, all around there.
Would you not think that it might be a better plan to finish at Grogan's Pub rather than start from there? You might have a problem getting them on the move if that's where you're meeting.
Well, it's a circular walk.
Oh, nice one. Well, the only thing in relation to that, I hope that people turn up, and I also hope you get the weather for it, Maria. Again,
yeah, please God, yeah.
Thank you so, so much for joining us and being so informative. Always a pleasure.
Thanks again, Tony. You're a star. All the best now.
Gurumil mil mahagot.
Gurumil mil mahagot, Tony. Slán nát.